If you're ready to confront your destiny, if this is the moment that you've been praying for, tune in and listen to your cosmic cheerleader, Commander Lady Athena, for cosmic pep talks for closet Christ. The show is the voice of the Ashtar Command. The call is for you to step forward into your greatness. Be listening on Wednesday. We have an appointment with destiny.
Greetings in the divine love and light of the Supreme Creator. I'm Commander Lady Athena, and you're listening to the voice of the Ashtar Command, Cosmic Pep Talks for Closet Christ. This evening, our seminar topic is True Seeing, Visions, and Visionaries. So if you're ready, take a deep breath and call yourself forward in your divine self, in your true self, in that which sees through the eyes of God. And integrate that omnipresent, all-knowing, all-powerful self. That is your true identity. And release anything that does not serve you at this time, that could be dissolved or ameliorated in some way through divine grace. Take a deep breath and release that into the loving of the divine, that all unlike the divine simply dissolves back into the nothingness from which it only seemed to appear. And ask, if you would like to, for yourself, that you could truly see, that you could truly see through the eyes of reality, that you could see in the light through which all vision comes, that which truly is, that which changes not, that which is the very bedrock of reality. So, only when we see as God sees will we be truly seeing. But to see as God sees, we must first examine how we are seeing, what we are seeing, how we're interpreting what we see. You always start with where you are right now. So examine as you go through your day. Why do you choose to see this in this particular light, this particular interpretation? Who is seeing? What are you seeing from? What doctrine or belief system or habitual pattern of thinking are you filtering what you see and what you hear? It's interesting because we can only know God when we know ourselves. It all comes through your understanding of your own nature, your own mind, your own way of seeing and expressing and interpreting. Everything starts with the knowledge of the little self, which when you truly see it, dissolves into that greater self, which is one with God. So in order to see, one must be that. For one but sees one's own reflection within these lower psychic and material realms of duality. It works as a mirror. So to truly see, one must dissolve the mind which projects differences. That would be the lower ego mind. And it dissolves into higher awareness. The mind is dissolved, interestingly enough, by the mind. By beginning to question what it is that we are seeing and why. Very few people question their thoughts. They tend to identify with their thoughts and their feelings. But if you want to awaken beyond both to where you live in that state of ongoing, just divine bliss, you have to go beyond and question whatever is not supremely happy and joyful and loving and peaceful, because that lets you know it's not real. Reality is Paramananda, supreme bliss. So when you use the mind to dissolve the mind, it is much like using a thorn to remove embedded thorns. Our embedded mental grooves, beliefs, and habits, our patterns of thinking, are like so many thorns which have snagged us in a fictitious sense of identity. That is, unhappy, discontented, conflicted, peaceless, depressed, isolated, lonely, all of the unhappy states in which you find yourself come because you've identified with a fictitious sense of identity. So the very act of questioning why one is seeing and looking at things as they are, of one's beliefs and interpretations, is seeing from higher awareness. That inquiry comes from your higher divine nature. Otherwise, you wouldn't have any inclination to look. That's why most people just go from day to day and they don't awaken, because they have never truly questioned their unhappiness and their sense of bondage and limitation. So that higher awareness is literally the light of your own divinity looking through your eyes and dissolving the conditioned ego mind. Think of your eyes as two big blazing headlights. And the source of that vision, that light through which you see, is the divine looking through your eyes. And that produces the revelation and the dissolving of the fictitious. So the Course of Miracles defines it like this, which is so perfect. God is the light by which I see, and vision is his gift. So it is your own God self that looks at your beliefs and dissolves the mists of illusion. Know this, God is seeing through your eyes. God is listening through your ears. God is animating your physical body. Remember that. There is no other you, only the God you, play acting as the many. To truly awaken and see, one only needs to want that above all else. Now, the only block is that we want to see the world, the phenomenal world, because we find that more interesting, so it captures our attention, and we give very little attention, if any, to the inner worlds of divine reality. But ultimately, that will change as we tire of this human carnival. It's like a 3-day fair, and after 3 days, you just, are tired of it, and you want to go home. So like that, when you really want to see, when the world begins to disenchant you so much that you just can't take any more of it, and above all else you want to see, you'll begin to see. And for everyone, it's inevitable. So visionaries see and carry the vision of what could be. So we could look at visionaries as people who operate, well, they could operate on two levels. They could operate within time-space, where they're reading the conditioned Akasha, much like a prophet. They're looking at whatever is imprinted on the Akasha. But I would say visionaries particularly work along the timeline, the parallel probable realities that could be quickened in the higher sense. And it's the duty, the dharma of visionaries, to carry a vision so that we can get from where we are to where we would ideally like to be. But we need the vision carriers to show us what we need to aim for. So visionaries are extremely important in terms of determining our direction in time-space and what probable reality, parallel reality, we need to quicken. So psychic visionaries operate within the realms of time-space and causation or karma. But there's a higher form of visionary that operates through direct divine seership. And they operate outside and beyond of the time-space continuum. And that higher seership has been called Devadrishti, or God's sight in Sanskrit. So certain visionaries see visions that in some cases are both positive and potentially negative visions that could occur if certain warnings are not heeded and addressed. An example of that would be the Marian visions and visionaries that we have spoken about in our last two or three seminars. The Mother Mary appeared to these children and said, look, if you do these things, you can avoid war. You can avoid this bloodshed, which turned out that people didn't do these things, and so we had the First and Second World Wars. And the same visionaries are receiving warnings today. We've got to turn our attention to reality, to the things of God, or we're going to be activating and creating needless misery and suffering for ourselves. So everything is speaking in nature, trying to get our attention. You're out of balance. You're out of harmony. Get yourself in harmony with life, which is love, relationship, joining as a family of light on this planet. Nationalism is egotism, expressing in a national sense. Are we going to operate out of the ego of our nations, which is separative and selfish and me first, and the heck with the rest of you? Or are we going to enter the higher paradigm, the higher consciousness of the soul of our nation, which is to cooperate and share and expand and extend in a brotherly, sisterly way to all of our fellow family of nations? That is what we need to move into, because we all need each other. Only the ego stands aside and says, I don't need you. You know, me first and to heck with you. That's not the way life operates. So certain visionaries see visions that are cyclic. That is to say, they keep repeating along the timelines. so that they could be seen to apply to many different periods in history. In other words, that which could apply to conditions in many historical periods. A lot of prophecy is of this nature, a lot of visions. So time periods appear to spiral with events recycling and reappearing as similar events. Bear in mind that in the lower phenomenal worlds beneath the unified field of the Christ consciousness or the soul realm, all of these phenomenal worlds and universes and galaxies come under the laws of polarity and duality with reflection and resounding of the same pattern. So that which has been referred to as the law of return or the law of reversibility repeats similar karmic lessons, personal, regional, national, and collective, until we get it and move into balance and harmony. Only when we return to unconditional, loving kinship and harmony with all life do we set ourselves free. In this particular universe, we are under the energies of love wisdom, and we are here to know that God is love. That is the universal lesson of this particular cycle of creation. So what are visions, and where do visions come from? And are certain people, only certain people, visionaries? It seems that visionaries are usually born with that gift. As far as I can tell, they're born with that gift. Or it's possible it may manifest after a near-death experience or a change of consciousness, as in the case of a walk-in. Yet it is a latent potential, like all other spiritual abilities, that everyone may possibly be able to tap into as one awakens more fully to one's true divine self. So always remember that one spirit manifests through each soul as the various abilities, but it's one spirit, it's not many. Everything comes through the divine spirit. Because our true self and nature is indistinguishable from our divine source and creator, we are designed to be like the divine source and creator. We're designed to be like God, omnipresent, all-knowing, and all-powerful. So the entire experience of appearing to be a limited, fallible, ignorant human being is a temporary role, which we wanted to experience. So we have each assumed this human body, mind, emotional feeling complex to experience what we are not. It's all play acting and imaginary, like a dream we've been having and keep repeating until we decide to wake up. But it's very interesting. We came from perfection, but we were curious about imperfection. We came from the one, but we were curious about experiencing ourselves as the many. We were whole and complete within the self, but we wanted the experience of relationship, of experiencing that separation so we could experience the joy of union. We came from omni-knowing so that we could enjoy the search to know. Think about the bliss that we have in seeking, in learning, in falling in love. All of the things we get to experience here in the human costume which we couldn't experience at the higher level. So we need to experience life fully, unabashedly, holistically. Dive in. Relish it. Savor it. Because it's what we wanted to have. We, being the one, wanted to experience being the many so that we could receive and give love. So when we wake up, we see and really see things as they truly are. Divine, perfect, pure, perfect, whole. Moreover, we awaken as the one divine self within every life form. We go from identifying with having one body and one mind to realizing that all bodies and minds are our own. That is what the avatars experience. They are aware of being you and me and every living person and life form. They experience themselves living in you, as you. And that is full God consciousness. You know, they come down to model that so that we can get an idea of what that's like. So, visions offer alternative possibilities along the timeline, like prophecy in a certain sense, because they exist, visions and prophecies both exist because of imprints, prior imprints upon the Akashic, which we spoke of last time. The Akashic is like a blank screen that mind casts an impression upon, and the Akashic then takes the form of that impression of consciousness. And sensitives can tune into that. First of all, every event that has ever occurred in any area has imprinted that area with its vibrations. The soil, for example, drenched with the blood of criminality or war, war, whatever, that soil literally cries out in despair because the life of that being is in the blood, and the blood cries out from that drenched soil in despair. The surroundings, whether interior or exterior, are imprinted with the energies of whatever has occurred in that place. That is why one who is sensitive to any degree will sense the atmosphere of a place. Some homes, for example, seem to evoke a mood that some can sense as soon as they enter. For others, it may be that it tends to seep into their awareness over time. But every place, you will notice, has its own atmosphere, its own mood. These imprints are states of consciousness and former activities that have occurred in an area or a house can be so powerful as to last for centuries. That's how the old pharaoh's tombs were protected. You know, they placed a force field and powerful curses or mantras over that area so that people would not violate their tombs. So other areas can be cleared, transmuted, or exercised by various means, by those that know how, and in some cases, it's better you just tear down that house and burn it. Or sometimes, forest fires will just come and destroy houses and purify areas that have been tainted by evil and warfare and criminal activity. And that's where the fires are a blessing that we practically no one mentions or thinks about. Because in some cases, only fire can erase the imprint. So that's why some places are best burnt down. That is also why some areas are imprinted as ancient sacred sites, places of vision quests, where rituals and native ceremonies take place. And these lands are indeed sacred and need to be protected and respected as such. It's these rituals that many indigenous peoples do that actually enables us to keep this planet somewhat viable and intact. And if we honored these places and these people, these indigenous elders and wise ones, if we paid attention to them, our earth would not be in the deplorably polluted, ravaged state that it is today. That's our shortcoming. So you can notice vast differences between entering a modern structure, say a church, for example, and an ancient Gothic cathedral. Some of these are many centuries, even in some cases there are structures that are thousands of years old, temples in India that are thousands of years old. The pyramids are much older than is commonly believed. The Sphinx is older still. These are sacred structures. So you can notice a difference between going into a modern mall or a modern structure, and then an ancient temple, holy site, cave, or place of sacred homage of any world religion. Really feel the difference. Notice that as you go in and out of places. Develop and expand your own ability to tune in. Then you have blessed items. In India, it is known that whatever touches, if the holy person blesses an item or uses an item, say, for example, their asana where they sit, or their shawl, or anything that they use, it carries their shakti, which in Arabic is called baraka or baraka. Baraka is spiritual energy. Cursed objects also can carry the energy of the curse of that person, the bad feelings, the bad, the bad intention, the evil intention is also impressed on cursed objects. That's why certain talismans are considered unlucky or lucky. That's why we think of lucky charms. And many cultures, they have, things they hang up to ward off the evil eye, because they're aware of the effect of a baleful glance. For example, in India, you'll often see that they put a big black dot on the children's cheek, and that is to appear as a blemish to ward off the evil eye. For example, if you're in India, you don't say, "Oh, what a beautiful child, you're so lucky." That's considered unlucky, because it could attract the evil eye. And there's a lot of jadu, or what we would call witchcraft, that's practiced in some of those villages in India and throughout the indigenous peoples. They're very, very careful to ward off the evil eye. So objects are also impressed, some indelibly, with the energies of those who have used them. I've never liked antiques for that reason. You don't know who has used them or what kind of consciousness. I also don't like to use things that are secondhand or things from wear clothes that other people have worn. Who knows the kind of thoughts, the kind of consciousness, whether they were sick or well or evil or virtuous. You just don't know when you're using other people's objects. So it's important to be aware of the effects of things. Now, if you bring in a secondhand object or whatever, you can clear it with the light. You can try that. You can smudge it. You can burn alcohol and Epsom salts in a large wok, a large dish, because it'll burst up into flame when you ignite it, so you have to keep it away from anything that could catch fire. But there are ways to to remove those things to some extent, but I think it's better just to get new stuff and forget all the bother of trying to adapt to someone else's, emanations. Likewise, if you're depressed all the time and you sit in a chair and you moan your fate and keep dumping your depression and your sadness in your chair, and you don't clear it, every time you get down and sit in that chair, you're going to feel that same energy come upon you. It's called ectoplasmic aura. And then it's better to get rid of the chair. Change your consciousness. Quit indulging in self-pity. Get yourself out of the doldrums. Take responsibility for your state of happiness and cultivate it. You have to work these things so that they work for you and not to your disadvantage. So it's because of the sediments of the gaze and the touch of people that certain sensitives are able to practice psychometry. They can hold something and tune in to the person that owned it. And that's because of what has been referred to by the masters as the chemism of the gaze. And that's where whatever is looked upon receives an imprint of that person's energy and intent. So in India, they won't even allow a person's shadow or a person's gaze to fall over their food. If they're really strict Brahmins, if someone who is in a negative state, who is not a Brahmin, who is not a pure person, walks into the room where the food is being prepared, they will throw everything away and start from scratch and cook their meal again. That's how strict they are in India with regard to a person's energy coming into contact with their food. I'm very much like that. I much prefer to eat in silence by myself. I do not really like to eat with anybody. And that's why I carry that Brahmin habit from the past. So, of course, this varies according to, speaking of the chemism, the imprint of the gaze upon objects, this varies according to the intent of the viewer as to how purposeful and targeted their intention was. For example, occultists, both positive and negative, can carry great power for good or evil. And that's why we need to be very, very, very pure before we begin to delve into these spiritual matters when it comes to using energy. You have to be very careful. I advise everyone to stay out of the realms of the psychic and the occult. I would just stay out of them because they're paths of power. And they're not paths of love, generally speaking. So in the highest example of energy impressions, you have the darshan, the seeing of a great person, a saint, a holy person, especially an avatar, can alter your entire life, your destiny, your cellular structure. Your hair samples and blood actually are altered by being in the presence of Sai Baba, for example. Some friends of mine had their blood and their hair samples examined before and after seeing Sai Baba, and there was a noticeable difference. So a great soul like Sai Baba can rearrange your entire cellular structure. So to receive their gaze, their mere look, that which has been termed the gaze of God or the Tiwaja or the Twaji can often change one's entire life. We know from gazing with the beautiful Croatian man, Bratzo, how many people are healed of every form of disease and made happier by just looking into his eyes for 5 minutes or whatever it is. So to receive the precious gifts of seeing, being touched by and having conversation with an avatar, especially a rare full avatar such as Satya Sai Baba, is said to grant liberation. These three precious gifts of seeing, being touched by, and having conversation with an avatar are called in Sanskrit darshan, sparshan, and sambhashana. And that's why devotees, especially the Indian devotees who are aware of this, do everything possible to touch the feet of the guru. And in the case of Sai Baba, to have him look at and speak to them, and especially to having his personal touch of blessing and to be called in for an interview. However, the outer interview is not so important. Sai Baba stresses it's the interview that the avatar makes possible so that you can begin to look beyond the form and to truly see. So people like myself who were called to Sai Baba in those early years of the 60s and the 70s, especially, not to mention those who lived in the small village of Puttaparthi in South India, where Sai Baba lived all of his life, we were especially blessed. Sai Baba said that he had purposefully held back the masses from knowing about his advent for some years. He would not permit any publicity to emerge about his presence on earth. And he did this, he said, in order to call into his presence those who had longed for many lifetimes to see and have direct divine contact. He said these ones deserve to have their longing at last fulfilled. So many of us were called. I think the earliest devotees from the West were called in 1964. I came in 1969. And it was to have, in many cases, that final thrust into God realization, that final liberation from having to reincarnate again. But to have the pleasure and the joy of gosh, in those days we used to touch Sai Baba's feet many, many, many times a day. He used to talk to us all the time. He was going and coming as they were doing construction in the ashram. So I would sit out there sometimes 14 to 16 hours a day just to be there in case he walked out all of a sudden. I had many, many divine encounters with him. And there was nobody else around. At one point there were only like six of us in the whole ashram who were not Indian, who came from, in this case, America. So, you know, Prema Sai Baba is Sai Baba's next incarnation, which is now a baby growing up, as far as I know. And so those of you listening who have not had the opportunity of being with Satya Sai Baba, you may pray to be drawn into his presence. Or maybe it's already part of your destiny, which is why I'm being guided to talk about this. So, you know, before all is said and done, we will have all incarnated with God at some point. We could have been with Rama or Krishna or Babaji or Yogananda or one of the avatars of Yogananda's lineage. Or Ramakrishna, or the Ramakrishna lineage. And now we have the opportunity of being in the mystical traveler's presence, in the presence of the Mahanta. These are all divine lineages of spirit. Or with the Dalai Lama, that's another divine lineage. You know, there's the avatar lineage, which would include Amici and Karunamai, and many of the divine mothers that are now manifesting on earth. These are all avatar lineages. So there's many, many forms that the avatar takes. But a full avatar is very rare. Sri Ananda Moima, whom I had the blessing of being with many, many times, was a divine incarnation, a full avatar of the divine mother. But there's others, you know, in your destiny, your good karma, your merit from previous lifetimes will draw you into the presence of, or like Ramana Maharshi, another one. Great, 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 great souls. So live a life that will ultimately draw you into the presence of such a great soul. During one of my many, many trips to India in the presence of Sai Baba, they were singing really beautiful Vedic mantras, which seemed very different. And they were being chanted, and I would go and sit near to the small mandir at Prashanti Nilayam to listen. Later, Sai Baba told us that these particular mantras had not been chanted since the time of the avatar Rama, and that everyone present in the ashram at that time and heard these mantras had been present to witness the coronation of Lord Rama in that time, many, many thousands of years ago. I remember, too, Sai Baba personally came and gave each of us a laddu with his own hands. A laddu is an Indian sweet that's shaped like a ball. And as he gave me my laddu, suddenly he turned to give me another laddu and noticed, you already have one. And as everything he says and does has a deeper meaning and purpose, I've often wondered at the significance of that. Was he seeing the presence of Ashtar, Jesus, John Roger? Only he knows. Only he knows. But I thought that was interesting because when he gave me the laddu, he looked into my eyes very purposefully, just barely started to walk away and turned immediately to give me another one and said, oh, you have one already. So we have very many experiences in dream, in vision, or in person with divine beings. And whatever is done in a dream, in a vision, or physically counts the same. So if you dream of Sai Baba or Jesus or John Roger or the Divine Mother, it doesn't matter. It's the same as if you were actually physically in their presence. Because to the awakened ones, everything in deep sleep, in awakening, and in dreaming is equally considered a dream. So pay attention when you have divine dreams. Sai Baba has said that the only reality to dreams is when you dream of God, or, as I said, an avatar, a divine being, Jesus, for example. So know that everything that exists was created by the same supreme divine source, and was created by and through and as the living Word, the living light, and the living love of God. And although the forms and names vary, there is one divine spirit that animates all these forms and lives in you as your true self. Everything is created of divine energy, of divine intent, called in Sanskrit, sankalpa. In this case, the sankalpa was the will to be, to extend love, to be the many. And thus that sankalpa set all things into motion as energy and consciousness. Really, that's the Big Bang. There was no Big Bang. There was simply the extending of the divine word, which caused, again, the manifestation instantly of that which we call creation. But God manifests as creation, as well as that which witnesses creation, as well as that which is beyond creation. So you have, in a sense, you have the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit, or Brahma, Vishnu, and Shiva, as that one in many aspects of expression. So the manifestation of energy with individualized cognition gave birth to what we call the mind. And the two together form what is called the sons of mind, or the mind-born sons of God, which would be all of us, which appears as the soul, or the individualized self. So it's like God pretended to be individual, and the soul took form. But at some point, like the wave returning to the sea, dissolving into the sea, we dissolve in the sea and awaken as the one. We don't lose that sense of identity. We just go from the little tiny me to the universal all that is. So it's an incredible thing that we're talking about here. Greatly limited by dualistic language, which misrepresents the oneness that we would like to talk about, but it's impossible to convey that when we still are looking at it through the mind. We have to go beyond the divided ego mind into pure divine awareness, and then we don't actually need words. But since in the Western world we've had no knowledge of these things at all, it seems that some of us are being guided, like myself, to share this very Vedic understanding in very modern, practical words, to give some sort of an explanation to how to move into the true self. We're told about the true self, we're told about the ego, but then very few people tell you how to move into these deeper states. And as we say, it is by vicharana, inquiry, listening, paying attention, practicing the teachings that one is given, trying to apply the keys as one goes about one's daily life. What are the keys that move my consciousness from this ego-isolated state to this expanded state where you're in a sense of joyful well-being all the time? You don't have bad days. You don't pay too much attention to the karma drama that's going on the news. You know, you live in a higher state of reality that's supremely peaceful and blissful and whole. And you can still walk your dog and raise your kids and go to work and be free inside yourself and happy and enjoy your life. You don't have to withdraw from life. In fact, life in the Western world, I think, is the greatest school of initiation we've ever had. So we might as well enjoy every minute, every day, and be present when you're in the different states of consciousness. Take them as your arena, your laboratory of experiment. You know, you don't have to be any special way. You just have to be truly yourself. Truly yourself. Just show up as you are, however you are. But don't take that to be all you are. Keep working with what presents. Keep mastering it. Keep understanding it. Keep transcending it. Keep moving on. So it's individualized mind blended with Supreme Spirit that caused the divine design to take form as you and me. We're divine design manifesting. And all forms, everything is taken on the same divine designs throughout creation. Now, forms can change, but the energy and consciousness can never cease to exist. What God creates can never die, can never cease to exist. It can only change form. So new forms can arise out of the source field of consciousness and energy and assume innumerable shapes and sizes. But that is all. Nothing created by God can ever die or cease to exist. Omniconic, for example, said that on the astral plane of Venus, once an object, say for example a chair, which they manifest through visualization, once that is created into manifestation, its shape and appearance can be changed into a different style of chair, but it will always remain a chair. I think that's interesting. And we can change our outer form and our outer name and our outer personality, but the spirit that we truly are, the I Am Divine Presence, remains the same throughout. So everything that exists was made of divine love. You and I were created by love for the very purpose of extending that divine love of our Creator throughout time and space. So it's like the rays of the sun extending its light. Like that, we each extend the love and the light of our Creator throughout creation and beyond. Isn't that beautiful? So it's only when we lose sight of our divinity and that of others that we behave unlovingly. Now we get out of sorts when we're not in touch with a sense of well-being, which can only arise from love. When you're in a negative state of consciousness, it's because you've lost contact. Now you've lost thought of, you've lost sight of, not really contact with, but your negative attitude makes you unaware of the love that you are, temporarily, you know. But notice when you're in a bad mood, you know, go back to bed and get up on the other side. Start your day anew. Go in like a Superman into the bathroom or wherever, and put on your divine suit, like he puts on his Superman suit. Do something like that, but change your unloving state to one of love. And because you always feel guilty when you're acting unlovingly, forgive yourself for forgetting that you are love, for losing sight of your own divinity. So when we're in a negative state, we judge and condemn ourselves and others. And then we lose our way and we stumble about in our self-made darkness. Our attitudes of againstness, our grievances, our judgments hide the light of the world that we were created to be. It's like we draw down the shades and we don't see anything in the light of reality. So when that happens, and you find yourself feeling alone, confused, afraid, it's very easy to return to the light. Stop. If you can, go someplace and forgive yourself for forgetting that you are divine. And so is everyone else. And it's as easy as that to remind yourself of reality. So bear in mind, we are all simply play-acting our assigned roles within this cosmic drama. And for any drama to be made more interesting, it has to have characters enacting contrasting roles. Each drama, therefore, has to have its heroes and its villains. Each actor is the same divine spirit, merely play-acting all of these roles. Remember that. For once the costume is removed, it reveals the same pure, innocent, divine being. Without our human Earth costume and our role play, we are as God created us, forever birthless, deathless, immortal, whole, pure, and forever one with our source. I often think of this when the sweet, innocent children come to our door each Halloween. Then, no matter how scary the outer costume, everyone knows it's only a costume. All are aware that under that disguise, that scary costume, is a sweet, innocent child, only playing make-believe. And like that, we will all realize, upon full spiritual awakening, that every human form is a temporary disguise the pure divine spirit has assumed. The one self has assumed all of these guises simply to share love through relationship. But here you see, in the realm of duality, we learn what is by that which it's not. We learn about love through experiencing unloving. We learn about light by experiencing darkness. We learn about goodness and compassion by experiencing evil and the pain that comes from evil expression. Evil, if you spell the word, is life lived in reverse. You know, if you spell it backwards. And the devil, if you spell it in the reverse order, spells lived. So it's that which has at one time perhaps been a positive life directive, becomes evil, spiritually speaking, when it retrogresses into a formerly outlived state. And so we mustn't live backwards. We mustn't return to outmoded ways of living as we're moving now into the golden age, as we're moving now into an age characterized by the outpouring of the Holy Spirit upon all flesh, to bring to the surface the hidden darkness into the light so that it can be dissolved in the light of truth. But we know nothing of truth as long as we're operating out of the ego mind. The ego mind wouldn't know truth if it up and kissed it on the forehead. The lower mind, Jesus said, can never comprehend the light. There's absolutely no fellowship between light and darkness. So we must learn to live in the light of our higher awareness so that we're aware where we place our feet, that we walk in grace, in the freedom extended to us through the office of the Christ and the order of Melchizedek that sent the embodied word as Lord Jesus and as each one of us as souls into the realms of duality to dance the dream awake. We came to walk like into the holodeck, like on Star Trek, but where we don't forget who we truly are. And although the others are all caught up in the programming of the holodeck, we walk as awakened souls, as awakened ones, as way showers, with the power to end program. Just that simple. End program. And that old matrix, that old computer program, stops. Because it's only been a machination of the mind. And as we walk out in full awareness, we have come and become the way, the truth, and the life. And we walk in the light of divine vision, divine seership, and we carry the vision of heaven, which we impart with every glance, with every word, with every touch. Everywhere are footfalls. We have claimed it for the kingdom of light. We have claimed it for a world that shines with the love and the peace that the Creator has extended as our true selves. And the earth is lifted into a new presentation, a new vibration, a new song. A new song is being sung, where the voices of the ancient past and the present age of grace co-blend and co-mingle and become one in the heart of each one of us, even as we remain forever as God created us, within that great heart. And we are the heart of God. And that's our only dharma here, is to be that. So I hope this has been helpful for each one of you. Raise your hands and say with me if you wish, my holiness blesses this earth. My holiness blesses this earth. My holiness blesses every man, woman, and child on this planet. And I send forth the love of the one supreme heart to touch to every life form in a way that they can receive it in the most loving and gentle way. And we pray for the happiness of all beings, for happiness is union with God. Let's go out chanting, one Anayu. Deep breath. Anayu. God bless each one of you, and be the blessings of God wherever you are. Namaste.